Hey guys, welcome back to Serial Sunday, or if this is your first episode, hi, welcome. I'm Jesslyn, I'm a little crazy, and I talk about serial killers and just murders in general and all that good stuff, you know, welcome. So I was scrolling on, I think Hulu the other day, and I saw a docu-series about, I remember watching, like, years and years and years ago, I remember watching a Lifetime show. It was either, like, a Lifetime movie or, like, a Lifetime kind of, like, documentary thing about, Jodi Arias. Arias. Jodi Arias. I can't speak. And I remember watching that with my mom and just being like, what? And this is probably why I am addicted to true crime now. It's probably all stemmed from me watching Lifetime movies with my mom. But so I was scrolling Hulu the other day and I saw a like documentary series about this. I think it was Hulu. I might be wrong. I don't know. But I think it was Hulu. But I saw a documentary thing about Jodi Arias and the murder of Travis Alexander. And I wanted to watch it so bad, but we were getting ready to go somewhere, so I couldn't watch it. But then I was like, you know what? I don't even remember half of the stuff that was going on in that case. So I was like, you know what? We're going to do this week's episode of Serial Sunday on it. So that's what we're going to talk about today. If my mom is watching this, she's probably really excited because this case and the Lacey Peterson case were two that I remember watching a lot of things about with my mom. So if she's watching, which hopefully she is, I'm pretty sure she watches every single one of them, but you never know. I don't know how. Okay, it's on the comments. Okay. Anyway, but so when I was actually doing like research on this case, there was so much information on this case, and let me tell you, I remember bits and pieces of watching like the stuff with my mom, and I remember how much of a total shit show her trial was. Like her trial literally lasted like 7 or 8 years or something like that, which I mean isn't like uncommon, but it was just a total shit show. And we'll get into some of it, but I didn't want to put it all in there because otherwise, I'm not even kidding, this episode of Serial Sunday would have been like 2.5 hours long with all of the information that there is about this case. So we'll start out with getting just a little bit of background information on Travis and Jodi. There was not a whole lot of like background information on either of them. There was more on Travis, but not a lot on Jodi. And I don't really know why, but there was not a lot. But Travis was born Travis Victor Alexander on July 28th, 1977 in Riverside, California to Gary and Pamela Alexander. And at the age of 11, he moved in with his paternal grandparents. And then after his father died in July of 1997, his 7 other siblings were taken in by their paternal grandmother as well. Travis worked as a salesman and a motivational speaker for prepaid legal services. And from here on out, whenever I talk about prepaid legal services, I will just say PPL because it was a lot to say all that. But that was pretty much all the background information that I really thought was necessary on Travis. And then Jodi was born, Jodi Ann Arias, on July 9th, 1980 in Salinas, California to William and Sandra Arias. And she, like I said, there wasn't a lot of backstory on her, but the one thing that I did read a lot was that she claimed that from the time she was around 7 years old, that she suffered from child abuse when her parents would beat her with belts and wooden spoons. I mean, how were they doing it? Were they doing it like repeatedly? Because I mean, I got beat with a belt and a wooden spoon a couple times. So being, you know. Sometimes you just gotta do what you gotta do. But I know how people feel about that nowadays, so we ain't gonna get into that. That's not what this is about. This is about a murder. It's not what this is about. But Jodi and Travis met in September of 2006 at a PPL conference in Las Vegas. She ended up converting to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And Travis was a member. His grandmother had converted them when they had all moved in. And so he was a member of that church. And she got baptized by him on November 26th of 2006 in Southern California. And the two began dating in February 2007. And Jody moved to Mesa to live closer to Travis. He lived in Mesa, Arizona. Forgot what state. But in April of 2008, she actually ended up leaving Mesa and moving to, I'm not sure how to pronounce this town. I'm going to butcher it. Eureka? It's literally Y-R-E-K-A. I don't know. Eureka? Sure. California to live with her grandparents. And so Jody and Travis dated like off and on for a year and a half. Did a long distance relationship, traveling back and forth from California and Arizona. It was kind of a tumultuous relationship. I remember there being things said about maybe him having other girls, but of course, no one really knows. But friends of Travis's who knew Jody were concerned about the relationship, saying that the relationship was very tumultuous and Jody's behavior was worrying. So, the murder was on, I didn't even put the date. Oh my God, I hate myself. Hang on. That's hilarious. I literally just put that he was found in his home in the shower. I didn't even put the date. You'd think this was my first rodeo. Okay, so it was on June 4th, 2008. They found his body in a shower in his home. And just going to put out a little graphic content warning. This case, it's a little graphic. I mean, just right now I'm going to talk about like what was wrong with his body and stuff. But I didn't leave too much really graphic stuff in there because, I mean, I looked at, like, crime scene photos and stuff, and let me tell you, it was brutal. If you've never watched anything about this case or read anything about this case, it was brutal. Like, legit. So, his throat had been cut, he had a gunshot wound in his head, and he had been stabbed multiple times. Reports vary with how many stab wounds. Some say 27, some say 29. But it was almost 30 stab wounds. He also had defensive wounds, like on his palms, his fingers, his wrists, showing that he had fought the attacker. And the medical examiner, Dr. Kevin Horn, testified that Travis's jugular vein and windpipe had been almost completely cut through. So, like, brutal. And his death was ruled a homicide. So, onto the investigation. In early 2008, Travis had told some friends that Jody was going to accompany him on a trip to Cancun, Mexico for a, work trip that was scheduled on June 15th. But in April, Travis had changed his travel companion to a different female friend. And I'm not sure if this was the point that set Jody off or if there was another point at some point. Like, I don't know what all happened, but something set her off. So, on May 28th, there was a burglary at Jody's grandparents' home where Jody was living, and a .25 caliber gun and some other items were taken and never recovered. And on June 2nd, between 1 and 3 a.m., Jody called Travis's cell phone four times, but it didn't appear that she reached him. And then after 3 a.m., Travis called Jody twice. The first call lasted 18 minutes, and then the second one lasted 41 minutes. Then around 4 a.m., Jody called Travis again, and the call lasted 2 minutes and 48 seconds. But neither call transcripts were presented during the trial, so I have no idea what was said in those phone calls. But they're weird times. Like, one was 18 minutes, one was 41, and one was 2 minutes and some odd seconds. Like, that's weird. I know there's a lot of, like, theories that he was already dead, and she was just staging those phone calls, but I don't know. At around 5:30 a.m., Jody drove south to rent a car for a long trip to Utah, and then around 8 a.m., she rented another car in Redding, California. And she visited friends in Southern California on her way to Utah for a PPL work conference and to meet with a man named Ryan Burns, who was a PPL coworker. And then on June 3rd, in like late evening, she left for Salt Lake City. And Travis had missed an important conference call on the evening of June 4th, and the following day, Jody and Ryan were in Salt Lake City attending business meetings for that conference. And Ryan later stated that Jody's formerly blonde hair was now dark brown, and she had several cuts on her hands that were like bandaged up and stuff. And she, according to him, she told him that it was from work, and she said that she worked at a place called Margaritaville, and she was making margaritas all night, and that's why her hands were all cut up. But during the trial, they stated that there was no such place called that, and that she was working in a completely different place at the time. So, like, what? Red flag number one. So, on June 6th, Jody left Salt Lake City and drove to California. She called Travis several times and left several voicemails and even hacked into his voicemail account. And she returned the rental car on June 7th. And the rental clerk testified that the car had been driven about 2,800 miles, and she told him that she was just going to be driving it locally. That's not locally. Unless you were going around and around and around and around. And he also testified that it was missing floor mats, and there were red stains on several of the seats, but the car was, like, clean and detailed before the police could examine it, so they were never able to figure out what the stains were. And then on June 9th, a concerned group of friends that hadn't been able to reach Travis went to his home. His roommates had not seen him for several days, but they just assumed that he was out of town. But then they ended up finding a key to his master bedroom, and when they entered the room, they found large pools of blood in the hallway leading to the bedroom, and then they discovered Travis's body in the shower. So they called 911, and they actually mentioned Jody by name and that she could be a possible suspect because Travis had told them that she had been stalking him, like hacking into his Facebook account, slashing his tires, like crazy stalker girl shit, you know, the drill. And then when police were searching his home, they found his digital camera, like all beaten to hell in the washer. I don't know. Maybe she thought that was a good place to put it. I don't know. But they were able to recover the deleted photos, and the photos were of Jody and Travis in, like, sexually suggestive poses, and those were taken at about 1:40 p.m. on June 4th. But the last photo, they assume the last photo of Travis alive was taken of him in the shower at around 5:30 p.m. that day. And then there were photos after that taken of a person believed to be Travis lying on the bathroom floor profusely bleeding. There was also a bloody handprint on the wall in the bathroom hallway containing both Jody and Travis's DNA. So on June 9th, Jody was indicted by a grand jury in Maricopa County, Arizona for the first degree murder of Travis, and she was arrested at her home 6 days later and then extradited to Arizona on September 5th. She pled not guilty on September 11th, and then during this time, she gave several different stories about what happened and her involvement in Travis's death. So she first told police that she was not even in the area on the day of the murder and that she had last seen Travis in March, even though she had been handed evidence proving that that was not the case. Like, she had been handed photos that they recovered from the camera that were timestamped and dated for June 4th. And you're going to sit there and pretend like the last time you saw him was March? I don't think so. But anyway, so then the second story that she told was that two intruders broke into Travis's home and murdered him and attacked her, but she got away. Okay. You watch too many horror flicks. I mean, I do too, but I haven't murdered anybody. So then later, she told police that she killed Travis in self-defense and that she was a victim of domestic violence. So this is where it gets a little hazy. There was so much information about the pretrial, the trial, like, oh my God, it was so hard to condense down into, like, to make enough sense, but also not make this 3 hours long. So there was a pretrial that began in 2009, and it was a literal shit show. There were motions to disqualify people. They ordered Jody to submit to IQ and competency tests. I can't speak English. They literally, like, had jurors in and out. Like, it was just a complete and utter shit show. People were relieved of their duties. There was a squabble about the jury who was in it. It was a complete joke. It was crazy. But then the actual trial began in 2013, 5 years after the murder. And she took the stand in her own defense. And she testified for literally 18 days. What? So she told her story about being abused by her parents from the age of seven. She talked about her relationship with Travis and that they were together sexually, but only in ways that would not contravene Mormon rules. Heaven forbid. She also claimed that Travis secretly harbored pedophilic desires for both male and female children, and that she tried to help him with these urges. What? But later, forensic experts testified that after examining his computer, they found no evidence of pornographic material or anything like that. But then later on, they said that they did. I don't know. This entire case was a legit clusterfuck. I'm sorry for my language, but it was. She testified that her relationship with Travis became more and more physically and emotionally abusive. And she claimed that she killed him in self-defense because he threw her on the ground and repeatedly kicked her after she dropped his camera. So is that why he's dead and that's why the camera's damaged? Like, just from you dropping it? It was severely damaged. Like, that's not just going to happen from you dropping it. But, again, this was her third story about what happened. Like, keep your story straight, bro. But then, she also, at one point, even claimed that she had memory loss or amnesia and had no memory of what happened. So technically, she's told four different stories now of what happened. There were also several psychology experts that testified on both sides, on the defense and the prosecution. The experts for the defense said that she was being abused and she was under extreme stress and she went into fight or flight mode to defend herself and she had PTSD and all this stuff. It was crazy. And then experts for the prosecution stated that they found no evidence that she was being abused by Travis, no evidence of PTSD or amnesia. They actually said that she suffered from borderline personality disorder and that she showed signs of immaturity and, quote, unstable sense of identity, end quote. In closing arguments, her defense argued that the premeditation theory did not make sense and that, quote, what happened in that moment in time, the relationship of chaos ended in chaos as well. There is nothing about what happened on June 4th in that bathroom that looks planned. Couldn't it also be that after everything they went through in that relationship that she simply snapped? Ultimately, if Miss Arias is guilty of any crime at all, it is the crime of manslaughter and nothing more, end quote. I have a problem with that. Manslaughter is like self-defense or, like, not even self-defense. Manslaughter is, like, hitting someone with your car, like, an accident. I don't know. Like, this was clearly not an accident. It was brutal. He was stabbed almost 30 times. That's not manslaughter. I don't care who did it. I don't care if it was her or somebody else, but that ain't manslaughter. Like, I'm no judge. I'm no detective, but that's not manslaughter. You don't stab someone almost 30 times and just be like, oh, she snapped. It's manslaughter. That's not how that works, sweetie. But the prosecution's rebuttal was, quote, there is no evidence that he ever laid a hand on her, ever. Nothing indicates that this is anything less than a slaughter. There is no way to appease this woman who just wouldn't leave him alone, end quote. So, more of a shit show up next. After this, several jurors were dismissed for misconduct. Several of them were released for health issues. Another one was released due to a DUI. Like, I'm telling you, her entire trial was a complete and utter shit show. But by April 25th, defense costs had reached $1.7 million. That's a lot of money. And on May 7th, 2013, Jody Arias was found guilty of first-degree murder, and of the 12 jurors, 5 found her guilty of premeditated murder, and the other 7 found her guilty of both premeditated first-degree murder and felony murder. So now we're into the aggravation phase. The aggravation phase is where they try to determine whether or not the defendant, is eligible for the death penalty. So now they're at the point where the prosecution has to convince the jury that the murder was cruel, heinous, and depraved, and try to get the jury to find her eligible for the death penalty. So the aggravation phase began on May 15th, 2013, and the only witness that they called was the medical examiner who performed the autopsy on Travis's body. They showed photos of the crime scene and his body, and let me tell you, I've seen those. They're brutal. Like, I don't know how you could look at those and not, like, oh my god, they're just awful. It's like overkill. Way overkill. The prosecution also paused for literally 2 minutes of silence to show how long he claimed it took for Travis to die. And after less than 3 hours of deliberation, they determined that she was eligible for the death penalty. So now we're into the penalty phase. So that began on May 16th, 2013, and the prosecution called Travis's family members to the stand to offer victim impact statements to try and convince the jury that her crime merited the death sentence. Jody offered an allocution, which is basically a statement to try and get a more lenient punishment for the defendant, during which she pleaded for a life sentence. And on May 23rd, the trial resulted, oh my goodness gracious, I can't speak today. The trial resulted in a hung jury, and the judge declared a mistrial. The jury was discharged. Now they needed a whole new jury. And at this point, the media surrounding this case was insane. It was everywhere. Everybody and anybody was talking about this case. So I wasn't really sure how they were going to find how they were going to find a jury who was not, like, biased, you know? So what came next was, again, a shit show. The defense was trying to get the prosecution thrown out due to acting inappropriately. They claimed that, quote, the prosecutorial misconduct has infested these proceedings with a level of unfairness that cannot be cured by any other means. They also stated that there was a circus-like atmosphere inside the courtroom and that the prosecutor had yelled at witnesses, attacked them on a personal level, and threw evidence around. End quote. I'm telling you, this trial was a complete and utter shit show. It was insane. But, oh goodness gracious, I done messed up now. I accidentally clicked all the way through my... Okay. So there was a whole mess of other shit that went down. And then by October 21st, 2014, now 6 years after his death, Jody's sentencing retrial finally began. There was a holiday break in the middle, and the retrial resumed in January of 2015, now 7 years after his death. The jury was deadlocked 11-1 in favor of the death penalty, and they tried to declare a mistrial 2 more times. But on April 13th, the judge sentenced Jody to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. And by March 5th, 2015, Jody Arias' trial had costed an estimated $3 million. That's a lot of money. And she was also ordered to pay more than $32,000 to Travis's siblings, and that this was about a third of the amount that was requested. So, like, dear God. But as of 2021, Jody Arias is housed at the Arizona Department of Corrections. For the first few years that she was there, she was in, maximum security. But now she is only in medium security. But, like, I don't even know. Like I said, if you watch anything about this case, the trial was a literal shit show. Like, it didn't need to be that, but it was. And her behavior while she was, like, during the trial and during the investigation and all this stuff, like, her behavior was so weird. She would literally sit in her cell and sing. One of the songs that she sang was, like, Oh Holy Night or something like that. Like, she would always sing. She was always, like, I don't know. I feel like she was trying to make a pity party for herself. Like, I 110% believe that she did this. Like, there's the, with the photos, there's, and his time of death and stuff, there's no other, I don't think there's any other way or any other person that could have done it other than her. But, like, the fact that she said that, or the fact that she said it was, like, self-defense, I'm like, honey, that wasn't self-defense. Shooting him or stabbing him one time would have been self-defense. Not stabbing him 30 times, slicing his throat, and shooting him in the head. That's not self-defense, sweetie. That's overkill. And there was also other things that I forgot to put in here, but I remember reading about them. She also borrowed two gas cans from a friend, or actually it was her ex-boyfriend. She borrowed two gas cans and then bought another gas can at a Walmart or somewhere, or gas station, and then returned that gas can like a week later, but they never found the other gas cans. And I was like, what was she trying to do with that? Like, the fact that they didn't find this premeditated, I'm like, what was she trying to do? I think that she had premeditated this. I think that she had thought it out. She was going to do something else. That backfired, and then she just went into, like, I don't even know, went into maybe, like, a fight-or-flight mode, and she just freaking went overkill on his ass. Like, I don't know, but, sweetie, that's not self-defense. I mean, it was brutal. There was blood everywhere. If you can find the crime scene photos, let me tell you, they are absolutely horrific to look at. But I can't. Like, her behavior was just so odd. She told multiple stories of what happened about her and Travis's relationship. She was something else. And, like, to watch her, to, like, go back and watch documentary footage or, like, interviews with her, to watch anything with her in it, like, just the look on her face half the time, I'm like, no. Mm-mm. You are a messed up individual. Like, you know how, I mean, it might just be me, I don't know, but maybe other people who are obsessed with true crime might understand where I'm coming from, but, like, when you watch enough documentaries, movies, whatever, when you watch enough things about true crime and you see the people who commit these just brutal, heinous acts, you kind of get a feel for, like, just their mannerisms, their, like, the look in their eyes sometimes, and you can tell, like, when they are just pure evil and there is no goodness in there at all. Like, you can see that, and that's the vibe I get from her when I watch things about her. I'm like, there's no remorse there, there's no guilt. She literally just tries to make it a pity party about herself, that she suffered from abuse and that she did it in self-defense. And I'm like, I'm like, seriously, no jury or judge in their right mind would have let you go free. I mean, they didn't, thank God. But I'm just like, and then in an interview with someone, I don't remember who the interview was with, but she said that they hoped that they ended up giving her life because she was scared to die. But then another time she said that she wishes that they would just give her the death penalty and get it over with so that she could die, because she said that she would rather die sooner than later. This woman was all over the heckin' place. Like, but seriously, that's all that I have for you guys. But definitely check out some documentaries about this. There's, I'm pretty sure there may be one on Lifetime. I know there's a couple on A&E. But yeah, definitely check out some stuff about this case, because it is wild. It is so wild and a complete and utter shit show. But it doesn't take much for, like, if you go into it with, like, an open mind, it doesn't take much for you to kind of convince yourself or be convinced that it was her. It doesn't take much. But again, I'm not trying to like make you biased or anything. Watch it with an open mind. See what you think. Let me know. But it's definitely, it's a wild case. But I also did see another documentary about the Lacey Peterson case. And so I kind of want to do an episode on that just because like, I don't know, I did this one and I remember watching the Lifetime shows about this case and the Lacey Peterson one with my mom. So I kind of want to do an episode of Serial Sunday on that one too. Just cause that case intrigues me too. And, if anybody has any like different opinions on what they think happened, I would love comments. Cause like, I'm not going to get mad that you have a difference of opinion than me, obviously. I like the back and forthness of that, like seeing both sides of it and seeing what other people believe. But yeah, if anybody wants to see that, definitely let me know because I will do an episode of Serial Sunday on that case as well. But otherwise, that's all I have for you guys tonight. And I hope you guys have a wonderful Sunday evening and a wonderful week. And I'll see you next Sunday for the next episode.